From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made at a daycare center where a group of children are sitting on a pretend bus singing the song The Wheels on the Bus. The game is being led by a young woman named Maggie, who is a student at the University of Rochester. Maggie has autism and attends a program for students with disabilities. She says although she aspires to work in childcare, she was nervous about this daycare job. She feared the kids would, quote, point stuff out, that she looked or seemed different than other adults. Maggie said she was bullied in high school and felt judged based on her disability, so she wasn't sure what to expect from the kids. If you listen to WXXI's podcast series Exited, you'll hear that the kids love Maggie. Our former WXXI colleague Karen Chakurji interviewed her both at her job and in her U of R class, where she was learning academics, job preparation skills, and life skills. Maggie said the program gave her the courage to get a job. And while Maggie attended a college program to help ease her transition from high school to an adult life, many students with intellectual and developmental disabilities go straight into the adult world. The experience can be daunting. So what do they and their caregivers need to know about next steps? That's the central question of an upcoming conference co-hosted by Autism Up and Nazareth College. The Next Steps Conference will offer informational sessions about self-direction, independent living options, college services, financial planning, and more. And I would just say, if this is your family, if you've got questions, if you know anybody in these positions, parents, kids, young adults, this is the kind of day where a lot of those questions are going to be answered. So we'll preview the conference that's coming up. We'll tell you how you can get involved and you can still attend. And we'll talk about navigating the transition and helping others through that transition. Joining us in studio, Rachel Rosner, Director of Education and Support Services for Autism Up. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Cindy Kerber-Gowan, who is a lecturer in education at Nazareth College and the faculty liaison for the Life Prep program. Welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And welcome to Jake Collier, a self-advocate, going to be talking about his own experiences. Jake, welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. We've got a lot to discuss this hour, and one of the things Rachel Rosner wants everyone with an ear listening right now to know is that on May 30th, you can still be there. So it's May 30th at Nazareth College. What are some of the things people need to know? There's still time.
Yeah, there is still time to register for the conference. The conference will be taking place right on campus at Nazareth College at a very reasonable price, and there will be almost 20 different breakout sessions. So each individual, each family, each caregiver can kind of divide and conquer and hear from a variety of different speakers, learn different things, and visit with 26 so far different vendors that are there from different organizations and businesses around town to help give them the tools they need.
May 30th, Nazareth College, from about 8 to 2:30. And online at autismup.org, just go to events, more information there.
Exactly right.
Okay. What are you looking forward to most with that day, Cindy?
I'm looking forward to being able to connect families with those resources and information that is really difficult for them to often get in one place. Moving from the school age system to the adult system can be really confusing for individuals and families. And knowing what the options are is something that isn't in one place right now. So it'll be nice to provide that access to families and individuals.
Jake is here because we've got a wonderful story to share, and Jake does. And for everybody in life, independence, goals, they're different for everybody. What that looks like, what you want your life to be. But I've got it on good authority that a lot has changed, and there's been a lot of progress in Jake's life, especially in the last decade or so. So why don't you step back a little, Jake, and tell us a little bit about yourself. So where are you from originally?
All right. Hi, I'm Jake. I'm from Williamson, New York, originally, over in Wayne County. And I went to high school at the Norman Howard School in Henrietta. I met a lot of great friends there, a lot of great people. Shout out to them. And then I went to FLCC and got an associate's degree in liberal arts and sciences. And since then, I stumbled upon Autism Up. Actually, it came across as a winter storm warning of all the places that closed.
Ah.
So I found it on the banner at the bottom of the screen, and I was like, what is that? So I went and checked it out, and I took a couple classes. And next thing you know, I really loved the cause and what they were doing there, and I wanted to volunteer, and I asked if they had anything I could do, and they had lots I could do, and it just continued to grow from there, that relationship.
I love that story of a snowstorm change in your life.
Yeah, pretty much.
So you see the word autism up. What does autism mean in your life?
For me, it all comes back to diversity and humanity. And I think that we all struggle with different things in life, and we all want to be accepted, and we all want to be independent. And sometimes it doesn't always come across the way you'd expect it would, but...
And can you tell me a little bit more about what you mean by the way things come across? When you were trying to communicate one thing, and we want whoever we're speaking to receive it a certain way, if it doesn't come across, tell me about what you mean by it doesn't always come across.
I think that, well, I look at it as I used to be really shy, like all the time, and I had trouble looking people in the eye, and I think that came across to people as, you know, I didn't want to forge relationships. I didn't want to be a part of something great. I kind of just wanted to be left alone, and that was okay with me and everyone else. But the truth of the matter is I just kind of needed that nudge, and I needed some people to search for the good in me and, you know, sit with that other kid at lunch who's sitting alone and just be there for them and find the good in them.
Oh, this is just amazing stuff. It really is so powerful to hear this. What did it feel like, especially in those days where you didn't quite have that nudge yet, and so people you were encountering might have been judging you, might have been thinking, he doesn't want to talk to me, he doesn't want to have a relationship, or maybe even he's acting rude. When those things were happening, how were you then internalizing and thinking about it?
Well, it's hard because when I feel that way, it makes you feel even more distant, and like you don't want to continue trying to pursue anything, and you just kind of want to go off and be on yourself by yourself. But the truth is, I really want to share what I have to offer with other people, and I think they deserve to see that in me, and I can offer a lot to them.
And when you might have been sitting alone at lunch, for example, you know, I mean, what's it like?
Well, it's not fun. You know, it's taught me a lot, and in the sense that because I know from experience how frustrating it can be to go and sit with somebody else who's sitting at lunch, because I know how that would make someone's day to know that somebody took interest in them, and regardless of who they are and what background they come from, somebody was interested in them and wanted to know about them. And just, it's a great feeling to feel like you're not alone, because we're all human and we don't want to be alone. We all want to be a part of something.
And so here you are now. You recently spoke, what, to hundreds of people? Is that right?
Yeah. The recent Autism Up Gala.
I mean, if I would have told the Jake from 10 years ago that you were going to do that, do you think you would have believed it?
No, of course not.
So let's talk a little bit about what kind of the steps, because that doesn't happen overnight. What were some of the nudges? How did those things start to happen for you to get you to feel a little bit more comfortable and maybe in interactions, whether it's making eye contact or responding in different ways? What was happening?
Well, for me, it's really doing your homework and getting confident. I was really controlled by fear and anxiety most of my life. I always assumed if I went up and talked to someone, I might like assume the worst, like maybe I'd be bothering them or they wouldn't want to talk to me. So then I wouldn't try it at all. But after some time, I decided again, I wanted to make relationships with other people, and I was gonna go that extra mile and take some chances. Go out there and reach out and say hi to someone, ask them about the weather, try to make eye contact with them and try to, you know, observe how they react to different situations and kind of take that on myself.
when you start doing that, and it takes the effort, you're almost kind of like training a new muscle. I'm gonna ask them, and I'm gonna respond instead of shutting down. Does it slowly over time become just more natural to do that?
Yeah, it definitely does. Yeah. And I like how you called it a muscle, because that really is how it is. It's like a new reflex. You know, you start off thinking, you know, I can't do this and I don't want to do it. But after you do it more and more, it starts to get more natural. And now I'm, you know, it just comes naturally. I say mm-hmm. good morning to everyone.
I think your comments about fear are really profound, and I think that they're universal. I mean, that's true for all of us. I'm going to put my cards on the table. I was a big fan of the show Lost before the final season. And in the very first episode, there's a scene where the doctor character is talking about he was performing a surgery and he had made a mistake. And someone said, well, weren't you scared? And he said, I was terrified. He said, but I've always thought in life everybody has fear. And so when I feel that fear, I allow it to take control, but for 5 seconds. I count to five, I take a breath, and I say, you don't own me anymore. Allow that to work its way through. And that's pretty profound. That's for everybody. What, for you, what was the fear of? What were you scared of in those sort of social interactions?
The word that first came to my mind is rejection. But you'll get rejected if you don't try, because then you'll never get the chance to be accepted. And that's what I learned over time. And I said, I really want to talk to this person. I want to let them know how I feel. You know, if somebody was singing in a concert or acting in a musical, and I wanted to tell them what a great job they did, you know, you could really brighten someone's day. And I think I thought of those positives too, like what could go wrong? I'm really just trying to make this person's day better. And I want to put myself out there and let them know how I feel.
And so you overcame so much of that fear now. And I want to dwell on as much of the positive, but I'll ask, do you have fear today? Do you have fear, not even just today right now, but generally speaking, are there things that give you anxiety or fear?
Well, I am a little fearful of being on the show right now.
Oh, man. listen, this is just profound, powerful stuff, and I'm grateful that you're here.
But there was a time that I wouldn't have wanted to come on this show, but mm-hmm. I know how important the message is and how this could help others like me who would also be nervous to come on a show like this or go on a stage and talk to a bunch of people, that we can do it. And
so can I ask for your help in dealing with some of my fear? I'm serious.
All right, sure.
I feel occasional anxiety in interview settings like this, because what I want to do is show real respect to all of our guests and to respect our guests' agency and all of the things that make us all human, but not to condescend, just to have a conversation about people. And I'm always worried that it's going to come off as either patronizing or, you know, sort of belittling or infantilizing, which is never the goal, because we all have fears and we all have these So what can I do? What can people do better when they're reaching out to you to kind of have conversations that would make maybe make you feel comfortable, but also maybe make the interaction go more effectively?
Well, I think really just trying to meet me halfway, mm-hmm. and I'll meet you halfway and understand what I'm going through and how some things might be more difficult for me than others. But I'll accept that about, you know, the other person too. And just being a comforting person to be there with me and converse with.
That's great. Well, agreed. We can meet each other halfway and then some. I think that's great. And part of the purpose of this hour is to talk about transition and next steps. And so for you now, you're doing very well, it seems. You're working. Tell us a little about the work.
Yeah, I'm working full-time at Vision Automotive, Buick GMC in Penfield on Panorama Trail. Shout out to those guys. And it's been great. I'm learning a lot of new skills that are very practical in the workplace. And I'm learning a lot about cars and how to take care of them and keep them nice and clean for the customers. And it's been a great experience, because a lot of my life I've lived in fear that I wouldn't get to this point either. And
you need a job.
Yeah. Because, again, of the fear. Do I want to put myself out there with my resume and be afraid of rejection? But you got to take that leap in order to know what the final result will be. So you got to be willing to take the risk. And that's what life's about. But it's important to me because I've wanted to be independent all my life, and I've had this fear, would I ever make it? Would I ever be able to get there? Would I ever be able to have a family of my own one day? And these are the necessary steps to getting there, and that's why I keep pushing myself and telling all my friends, keep pushing yourself because you can do it. You can get there. And
so when you think about that independence, what you want for yourself, how much more do you feel like you need to do to kind of take those steps? I mean, like, do you think of yourself as sort of pretty far down the road? How do you feel about it?
Well, I'm a believer that we all have a lot we can work on. Mm-hmm. And I never stop to say that I've reached perfection because I don't think it's attainable. And I feel that I can continue working on things and continue becoming a better me. That's what's important, not being a perfect person, but becoming the best person you can be. And going through life and learning all these lessons of, you know, how you can get there. And
you got family who loves you, some of your family here today. How much have you thought about just how much have you had in terms of conversations with your family about what do we want for each other? What does independence feel like? Have you talked about that a lot over the years?
Yeah. And they've been very supportive of me, and that's, you know, they're my rock. That's how I've gotten here. Family and friends and everybody lifting me up and being that person who comes to me at the lunch table when I'm sitting alone, that's who they are. They telling me that I can do this and I just need to focus and keep learning and keep going.
And so kind of paint a little picture for me. 10 years from now, where would you like to be? What would you like life to be like?
10 years from now, I don't know what I want work to be like, but I'd love to be working. I'm a hard worker. I want to be independent. I'd love to be on the path to starting a family. I'd love to keep volunteering and advocating. That's really the most important thing to me right now, is it breathes life into me to know that the experiences that I've had in the past have put me in this position to help others who experience similar situations growing up, and to be able to offer my insight and input and my encouragement to tell them that, you know, we're almost there. We're going to make it.
Well, I'm so glad you're here, Jake Collier.
I appreciate it.
Telling his story and talking about what's been required for him to kind of make these changes and to think about independence. And you can't see them, but there's tens of thousands of people listening right now. I tell you that because, you know, you've done most of the hard work now, so we can laugh about it. But you've also said some things today that I guarantee you are going to stay with our listeners for a long time. It's really powerful stuff. It's really great stuff. And, you know, Rachel, every time we talk about it, isn't this amazing, these kind of stories?
Yes. I would like to. Part of the reason why I do what I do is so that these stories don't become so amazing at a certain point, is that families and individuals don't have to work so hard to get to that point.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I was just going to say, you know, Jake's such an accomplished young man, and he has found a way to move into his adulthood, you know, meeting finding his dreams and continuing on with them, becoming an advocate, finding independence, looking forward to the things he wants in the future. And that's what we want all people to have access to. And I think that for a lot of just kids in general, typical kids in high school, that journey is a difficult one, but we often have guides that help us along the way, parents, families, neighbors, school personnel. And what we find is for kids who have intellectual disabilities or certain other developmental disabilities, you know, they don't have access to those guides in the same way, and they're navigating a much more difficult system. It's not as straightforward. And so we would like to see more Jakes, right? Because we want to see more individuals who have that access and can reach their potential. And Jake's still going. And I'm excited to see him in 10 years.
Well, there's a part of what he was saying that I think is really important, at least from my perspective as someone who is really kind of keen on understanding the way we communicate. Because when he talks about the anxiety that he especially used to feel, fear of rejection, fear of social interaction, the concern about making eye contact, the concern about just interacting back and forth, and the ways that sometimes you shut down or you don't make eye contact or you walk away, that can potentially injure budding friendships, but it could also impact what an employer might think. There's so many different things. And if people don't try to meet Jake halfway and follow through on what all he wants people to do is try to understand me a little, like I want the same things you do. If people don't know that, there's a real risk to some of the outcomes. How common is that concern, especially in the autism community, that because you met one person with autism, but to the extent that there is anything somewhat consistent, is there a challenge in the way communication is perceived by the neurotypical community?
I mean, I think the answer is absolutely yes. That's why autism does what we do every day to make sure that the greater community is a little more educated, a little more accepting, a little more open, so that all of our kids and young adults can have the same kinds of opportunities, and maybe it won't be quite as difficult as it was for Jake. That we can try to just make that little bit of a difference for one more person, one more business, one more school, one more neighbor, to be willing to meet halfway.
And if I could just piggyback on it, I know that that's, you know, one of the reasons why Nazareth continues to support these types of programs, specifically so that we can impact our undergraduate and graduate students in a way that they leave us and go out into the world being more understanding of the people around them, that they don't need to meet a person and say, oh, you have a disability, I should be kinder to you, but that they leave us and they go into the world thinking, I'm going to meet everyone halfway because I just don't know. And it's important as a human to provide that a little extra bit. And so that's one of the reasons that Nazareth supports all of the programs that it supports, including this one, is really about that education, not just for access for families and individuals, but for everybody else.
I would hope that helps us sort of extend that idea to everyday interactions, whether we're talking to someone at the store, we're bumping into somebody in line, we're talking to someone with autism, we're talking to someone who's neurotypical, because you're right, like you have no idea what somebody's going through. You have no idea what's happening in their home life. You don't know what's happening in their personal life. And sometimes I get stuck in this rut of like, if people don't react the way I would, I think, well, that person was, you know, I mean, it's just, I think it's probably human. I hope it's human, but it's a real shortcoming I have. And I feel like the conversation with Jake is going to help me in my interactions with everybody, because you don't know. You really don't know. If you want to get involved with the conference that's coming up here, why don't we sort of reset, because just took in a lot of information. And May 30th, it's coming up here. What's happening on May 30th?
May 30th at Nazareth College between 8 a.m. and 2:30 p.m. We will be hosting almost 20 different presenters on a variety of different topics, from housing opportunities to educational opportunities, to provide individuals with disabilities, their parents and caregivers, educators and professionals in the community, more resources so that everybody can know what is available in our community. The fact that we have so many options to choose from, that we're able to have such a large number of these breakout sessions is pretty amazing. We're lucky to live in a community that has such a variety of these kinds of resources, and we want every family to know what is out there.
All right, so it's May 30th, autismup.org. Go to their events, and it's the Next Steps Conference. Let's take our only break of the hour, and we'll come back and talk about some of those individual ideas that they're going to be breaking down and kind of going in depth on. And there's a lot more to discuss with our guests. You just heard Rachel Rosner, Director of Education and Support Services for Autism Up, Cindy Kerber-Gowan, who's a lecturer in education at Nazareth College and the faculty liaison for the Life Prep program, and Jake Collier is a self-advocate telling his story here. Let's take that break and come right back with them next. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, a conversation about energy affordability. NYSERDA and the New York State Department of Public Service are hosting a public feedback session in Rochester talking energy initiatives. And they want to talk about how to make sure all communities have access to affordable, clean energy. Second hour on Wednesday, the College of Collectible Knowledge is back. We're joined by appraisers in studio answering your questions about antiques. It's going to be weird and wild. Talk to you Wednesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So the event that's coming our way, the Next Steps Conference, is this partnership that is going to do a lot of different things in that six and a half hours. And if you heard me mention that Cindy Kerber-Gowan is the faculty liaison for the Life Prep program, you might have stopped and said, I do not know what the Life Prep program is, and I should have asked you earlier. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. The Life Prep program is a transition program that's a college-based transition program. Jake, I believe, went to one of the similar programs here in Rochester. But we provide a transition program to individuals with developmental disabilities between 18 and 25-ish, an opportunity to go to college and experience what college has to offer. And following the same path as their same age peers, right, which is to get skills that will help them become employed and become more independent. And so that's the purpose of college and the purpose of our program.
You want to add to that?
No, my son is about to graduate.
He did from our program.
Technically, yes, but we have a few more days. So for me, the idea that someone with an intellectual and developmental disability can have that opportunity is the way it should be.
Again, should not be an extraordinary thing.
Absolutely. So one of the pieces that we're going to be covering at the conference, one of our sessions, is about those college-level opportunities for people with disabilities, whether they're a matriculated student who goes through and gets a degree like Jake did, or whether there's someone like my son who goes to a program like Life Prep and has a different kind of experience, ends up with a different piece of paper, but has had the opportunity to have that same campus student inclusive experience.
So in a moment, we'll ask Jake a little bit about his educational experience, and we'll talk a little bit about how that went. But let me just give you a little bit of information. According to the Atlantic Monthly and some notes compiled by producer Megan Mack here, and this goes back, by the way. So what I want to know is I want to kind of go over some of what the landscape they're painting here is. But these pieces go back to 2015, 2013, 2011. And the question is, are we still in the state? So what the Atlantic reported was nationally, only about two-thirds of students ages 14 through 21 with disabilities graduate with a, quote, regular diploma, while most of the remaining students simply drop out. And these figures encompass all students with disabilities, including those who are sort of defined as relatively high functioning. Compared to their peers from all disability groups, youth with intellectual disabilities, for example, have the lowest rates of education, work, or work preparation after high school. And a 2011 Department of Education study that looked at the outcomes of young adults with disabilities up to 6 years after high school found fewer than half of the young adults with multiple disabilities had a paid job at the time of the survey, compared to 79% of young adults with specific learning disabilities such as dyslexia. So tough numbers, but this go back to different studies all the way back to 2011. Is that roughly what it looks like today?
It is. Okay. I think that, you know, when we look at unemployment, for instance, the level of unemployment for individuals with intellectual disabilities in particular are incredibly high, and that's a problem. There's really no reason that we should have that high of unemployment. So one of the reasons that we're having this conference and some of the sessions that we're hoping that people can get some more information about are some of those programs that are available to adults after they leave school to access additional job training and at multiple levels. So that might be Project Search. It might be through the Access VR system. It might be Monroe County ARC is going to come and talk about just adult levels of adult services, for instance, and what that looks like. I don't know if you want to add anything, Rachel, but those numbers are scary and they are still a big problem.
Mm-hmm. And one of our big goals in terms of having this conference is to make sure that families know what the next steps can be. They're different for every student, but if you are the parent of a middle school child, it's time to start thinking. It's time to start planning and exploring what the options are, what might be a path, what things are open to me, what things are closed to me, so that you don't have to panic when your child turns 18 and walks out of their public high school with a diploma, or when they turn 21 and exit from the school system without a great plan in place, without a job, and without the next step in their journey. So we want families to be prepared as far in advance as possible and to have knowledge of all the opportunities that exist so they can figure out which one best meets their needs.
Yeah, I'm thinking in this country, you know, you go back decades, we have a really ugly history of institutionalization of people with varying disabilities, physical abuse, and you'd like to believe that we've largely left that part of our past behind. But at the same time, when you look at the numbers I just read, granted, we're not a country that's institutionalizing at the same rate. We're not physically abusing. We're not doing the things that used to happen, but there's still something that's falling short. And so my assumption would be, without really digging deeply into it, that either schools do not still have the resources needed to help, or maybe there is sort of what we would call the poverty of low expectations and the assumption that I don't know sort of what the factors are that put us with these numbers.
I think some of it, though, too, is just the difference between school and adult system. So the school system of special education is an entitlement program. It is something that all students with a disability qualify for, and there's a certain level of expectation. Sometimes we fail at those expectations, but that they exist. The adult service world is not an entitlement program, and so things change so vastly between those two steps that I think a lot of people fall through the cracks. Mm. So they leave school where there's been someone sort of helping them through that process, and they enter the adult world, and there's just no one there as a guide for them. I don't know if you agree, or if Jake, what's been your experience moving, you know, from that school to job kind of placement?
Yeah, let's talk to Jake about that experience. So just remind us again, where did you go to high school?
I went to the Norman Howard School.
Norman Howard, and then you, from Norman Howard, you went to?
Finger Lakes Community
FLCC,
College.
FLCC, and how long were you there?
I was there for about 2.5 to 3 years.
Okay.
To get my associates, and I actually spent most of my time on the Newark campus because it was a lot smaller, and that's something I'd like to talk about, too, about how the environment really affects some of us.
Well, the floor is yours. We'd love to hear this. Go ahead.
Yeah. Like, I can't speak for everyone. Again, everyone with autism is just another person with autism. Mm-hmm. But I know that most of us, we have trouble with different lights and sounds and crowds, and it's hard to drown out all of that extra noise. So sometimes when we're having a conversation with others, we pick up on things going on around us, and we kind of get lost in that. And then next thing you know, you're having to ask them, could you repeat that, please? And even just like someone like tapping, you know, their pencil on the desk, it can be, you know, aggravating. It's like your senses are going haywire, and they're trying to manage more than they were meant to. And it kind of sends your body into a bit of a panic. And it's just, I don't know the whole science behind it, but that's how I felt. especially with lights too. I mean, just walking in and it's like I don't want to deal with it. It's overwhelming.
What is the best campus you have been on to have kind of addressed these issues?
I think really for me, it's I would recommend the smaller ones that you can find where the classes are smaller and you're able to advocate more and people understand your needs better. And I have not been to a larger college to attend classes, so I'm not sure what that feels like, but I could totally understand why that would be hard for others like me because of everything going on and needing to process all of it. A lot of us are observers and we're very curious, and it's because we're taking everything in and we just got to find a way to drown it out and focus on what's most important at the time, but that's not always easy.
Did you feel overall your FLCC experience was a good one?
Yeah, definitely. I also took a lot of online classes, which was helpful, so I could keep making relationships there, but I also had time by myself to do online classes and to communicate through chats. You know, when you type up your messages and you send them to your classmates, and sometimes it's easier to get your thoughts out that way. That's why I've become a pretty good writer these days, too. It's really helped me.
When it comes to the classes themselves, are you in touch with professors, especially if it's not an online class? Are you talking to them about maybe some of the needs or preferences you have? And if you did that, did you find them receptive?
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, all the professors are different. Mm-hmm. I know from my experience, most of them have been very kind and accepting of what I have to bring to them, but I don't think they always know exactly how to deal with the situation. Because as I was talking about the senses and all of the science behind that, I mean, it is hard to understand it. It's, you know, I don't understand it, but it's not a good feeling when you're in that position, and it just helps to have others understand that. Okay, this person's going through a difficult situation and I just need to accept that and be there for them and encourage them that they're going to make it through it. And could always do just little things like stop tapping your pencil for a moment and turn off the light, mm-hmm. make it dimmer.
Mm-hmm. What did you like best about the college experience?
Again, I loved meeting all the people there. It's great that nowadays most of the people I've come into contact with have been very accepting and appreciative of where I'm coming from, and that we've all come from different walks of life, and that, you know, it's important just to make a strong connection and to share some laughs and have a good time because we only live once. And it's great that there's people out there who understand this.
That's interesting you say that, because you described yourself, you know, in your earlier life as really struggling with social interaction, and the first thing you mentioned about college was the social interaction.
Because I've come so far, and I owe a lot of that to my high school, Norman Howard. And again, my class there, my graduating class was about 20 students. Again, because I was able to really get to know all of them on a personal level, and everything was laid out there for me.
What classes do you remember in FLCC enjoying?
I fell in love with lots of the art classes and philosophy and writing, and I just
so. Anything that stood out that you would change tomorrow about college? Is it just some of those individual needs, the size of classes, or anything else that stands out?
I think my experience was very, you know, very good there. The classes were really small, not as small as at high school, but because of my journey at high school, I was able to continue figuring things out and get to where I am now. And
you know, and I want to ask you a question that's kind of related to what we've been talking about, but just observing the way you have communicated with me. In a moment, I'm going to read an email from a listener that I think perfectly captures my thoughts on this conversation. But before I do that, you talked about what might distract, you know, a clicking pen or a tapping on a, you know, like a little tapping on a table, things that in a college classroom setting might make it actually difficult for you to focus and concentrate. Do you find yourself, when you're just talking to friends, if they're talking to you but half the time they're on a phone, they're not making eye contact with you, they're looking away, they're doing other things, they're multitasking, does that make it harder for you?
It can. It depends on the situation. Mm-hmm. Depends on how much eye contact means to you, really. And for me, eye contact hasn't really ever been a big thing because I just focus on the words they're saying and I put all my energy into responding to them. Mm-hmm. It takes energy to look at someone and understand their facial expressions. And that's why I think the science behind it, we look away because we're trying to compartmentalize all that energy into what they're saying and how to respond.
Mm-hmm. So let me read this email if I could, Jake. Nick writes to the program and says, "Wow, every word that came out of Jake's mouth was perfect. Not a syllable wasted and all of it honest. That kind of communication skill is a gift. Get that man a job in marketing communications." So, I want to add something to what Nick is saying, knowing that I don't want to add this in a way that is, again, sort of patronizing at all. I could not agree more. I do 500 hours plus of live radio a year. And early on when I was hosting this program, I would go back and review my own tendencies. Everybody's got verbal tics, things that kind of, a lot of people say, you know, a lot of people, you try to eliminate the ums, which inevitably come at some point anyway. I don't know that you have any verbal tics. You are just a fantastic communicator, absolutely unquestionably better than me, which isn't, it's not a competition, but it's true. It's true. You are one of the clearest communicators on a microphone that we've ever had on this program. And to Nick's email, he's right. I think the sky's the limit on what you want to do with communication. I just want to echo that. You're just a fabulous communicator.
Oh, I appreciate that so much. Thanks, Nick.
So I'm grateful. And Nick, thank you for that email. I just couldn't agree more. So let me grab a phone call. Caleb is in Pittsford and wants to jump into the conversation. Go ahead, Caleb.
Hi, thanks. I want to echo what you just said, Evan, that Jake, you're a great communicator, and one of the things that you do that makes you communicate so well is that you're patient and you say your words really clearly and you're unrushed. And I'm a Dale Carnegie trainer, so I help people kind of learn to be more self-confident and communicate well. And I had a class recently where somebody asked me to coach him differently because he said he was on the spectrum. And it took me a couple tries, and I made a couple mistakes. But then I really listened to what he had to say, and I coached him better, and it felt like it went really well. And so I think that you have a lot to say, and I wonder how you advocate for yourself. And also, I just want to, before you answer how you advocate, just talk about the importance of patience and maybe some more silence that we could use in the way mm-hmm. we communicate mm-hmm. to listen better. And there's a book by Susan Cain called Quiet. Success of an Introvert in an Extroverted World, that you just have a nice pace and volume. And how do you advocate for yourself, Jake?
Great question, Caleb. Thank you. So you want to start with, how do you consider yourself an advocate for yourself?
All right. Thanks so much, Caleb. That message really means a lot to me. For advocating for myself, I just focus on what needs to be said, what I need help with. And I look at it as everyone around me is human too, and we all struggle with things, and I can just let them know what's on my mind and what could we try to do to fix it or meet halfway. And I love what you said about silence, because I've always been a soft-spoken guy. And I think it really has helped me throughout the earlier stages in my life, especially because I take in what everyone around me says. And I take in the reactions they've had and how they react to different conversations. And it's really helped me grow also. And
well, that's great. And I think you're going to be offering hope through your words and your own experience this hour to those who would need it. And in that regard, I'd like to read another email that came in from John, who says, "Awesome program. I'm a counselor who works with autistic students. I have one in particular who is hopeless about the future. He is 15 years old, occasionally expresses suicidal thoughts because the world is so overwhelming to him. I'm wondering what words of hope I might be able to encourage him with as we continue to work together. Thank you for your response." I'll ask all of you. I'll start with Rachel on that. What would you say to John?
I feel highly unqualified to give a response, but what I would want him to know is that we're here. That there are people in his life, in his family, in his neighborhood, in his community, that are here, that are ready and willing to step up to help in any way that they can.
Okay. What would you want to add there, Cindy?
You know, I'm not sure I can. So I have a 14-year-old with autism, who's diagnosed with autism, who sometimes has some very similar thoughts, and it's something that we struggle with. And so it's great when we get to introduce him to hearing from or meeting people like Jake, who are just adults, being awesome, being their true selves, so that he can see that he's not someone who should be othered. Because I think that's what he struggles with the most, is that he just feels so different. Mm. So it's nice to be able to make those connections. But I don't know what to offer, because we struggle with that ourselves.
Sure. So I would say before I turn to Jake, and this is heavy, so I mean, if Jake wants to add something, he certainly can, but you know, there's no obligation. It's tough. But John, I would just say, you've got the conference coming up, the Next Steps conference, that is meant to be an insight for everybody who's dealing with questions on what happens next, transition, what the future looks like, all of the challenges that come with that. That's May 30th at Nazareth College from 8 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., especially for caregivers, for people who want to help. And it does sound, Cindy, like part of the message is hopelessness comes when you don't maybe see a path or a future. And sometimes the important thing is to interact with people who have been there but are thriving and doing well.
And I think that that's one of the things that we're hoping to provide an opportunity for at the conference, for you to be able to interact and meet other families, other individuals that are either in the same place or in a different place, but to really make that community feel more present in your life instead of it being so separate.
AutismUp.org is the website. Just go to the event section. So AutismUp.org/events, and it's the Next Steps conference there, John. Jake, do you want to add anything to John, who's concerned about a 15-year-old who feels hopeless at times?
Yeah, I'd love to. I'd first say, as I say to a lot of young adults I work with at Autism Up, is, you know, your family, John, and I've been there too. I've felt hopeless around that same age, and I always wondered, what am I gonna do? Why am I feeling the way that I do in certain situations? And really, just the best advice I can give is to just never give up and keep going. Keep reaching for the stars and you'll get there. You just need to wait for life to embrace you in ways you couldn't imagine. You'll find where you belong and you'll get there.
You've had those tough moments yourself, huh? You can relate to that.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, look at you now. I mean, just a remarkable story. I agree with Rachel's point. I mean, this should be the daily story, not the outlier stories. But I think anybody who would meet Jake would think he's a remarkable person. And so, John, thank you for the email. And I think everyone's hearts go out to you and the people you work with, just trying to help them see that path. That's part of the point of what Autism Up is doing, Nazareth College, and the partnership for the upcoming conference. So in our last minute, I'll just ask, Rachel, if you want, just tell our listeners the kinds of things that you hope they'll walk away with if they're there with you on May 30th.
I hope that anyone who comes to the conference walks away with new information, new resources, and new connections with each other. We have made a lot of space during the course of the day to make those connections with the vendors that are coming to talk about their to the services and programs that they offer. But we hope that the parents, caregivers, individuals will come and connect with each other. That's the most important part.
All right. So autismup.org/events. It's the Next Steps Conference on May 30th at Nazareth College. Thank you. Thank you, Rachel. Thanks for being here as always.
Thank you, Evan.
Our thanks to Cindy Kerber-Gowan, who is a lecturer in education at Nazareth and a faculty liaison for the Life Prep program.
Thank you.
And Jake Collier, I'll tell you what. Early when I was hosting, I noticed another talk show, the Hugh Hewitt Show. They print transcripts. And I remember myself thinking, oh my goodness, this is a live hour-long show, and it sounds like the guy speaks in perfect paragraphs. And I set out a goal to eliminate the ums and all that stuff and to say, if I actually transcribed the program, would it look like I was typing it out? Would it look like I was speaking the way I would write on a computer? Rarely. But you do, and I'm going to remember this. And I've learned a lot just talking to you. And I'm absolutely serious. I'm grateful you were here. Thank you, Jake.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Wonderful day. Our thanks to David Griffin volunteering with us today. Rob Braden is the engineer. Meg Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a wonderful afternoon wherever you are. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.